Welcome back. You have found Wooden Sticks with Kevin Gorg here on the Talk North Network. Really excited for the show today. It's been unbelievable to watch the growth of women's hockey. And if you know my backstory, you know I was a women's college coach at St. Thomas for the better part of 10 years, starting back in the late 90s. And just being a hockey fan here in the Twin Cities and watching high school hockey from, time I was 6 or 7 years old. One of my favorite memories is back in the 90s watching the start of the girls' game and getting to see superstars on that stage for the first time. And literally one of the biggest, if not the biggest, in terms of stars on that stage was Natalie Darwitz. And she played at Eagan High School. I lived in the area. I went to a bunch of the games. I knew her dad, Scott, great coach. And she was just one of those players, like a Wayne Gretzky, that could slow the game down. You know, people always talk about playing at the National Hockey League level, how the game happens in fast forward, and it's so hard to make decisions with the puck, and everything happens as if you're watching it in fast forward. Natalie could slow it down where the game was in slow motion. She had the unbelievable gift of rink vision, soft hands, and then that capability to use those skills to get to open ice and finish, even though every time she stepped on the ice, and I mean every time she stepped on the ice, the number one job of the opposition was to shut her down, and they would try to put one, two, sometimes three players on her, and they couldn't do it. A remarkable talent that started at Eagan High School, as I mentioned, went on to play for the Golden Gophers, won multiple national championships there, played on three different Olympic teams back in 2002, 2006, and 2010, was a pro player in the meantime for the Minnesota Whitecaps, and then after her playing days has gone on to be a college coach, high school coach, and she's now the general manager of the professional team in town, Minnesota and the PWHL, and they're off to an amazing start. They had the record crowd for their home opener. I can't wait to ask Natalie what that experience was like, because the league opened up on New Year's Day and had some big crowds north of the border in places like Ottawa, which are hockey hotbeds. And we pride ourselves in Minnesota as being the state of hockey. How would that go? You know, because we have so much other hockey. We have great high school hockey. We have college hockey all over the Twin Cities. We have, of course, the Golden Gophers, men and women. We have the Minnesota Wild and their great following. How would the PWHL fit in? How would people receive them? And then they have almost 14,000 fans for their home opener. And my daughter was a part of that crowd. So I have a personal story I want to tell Natalie in terms of that and just how the league has got off to this tremendous start. They've got the best players in the world. They've got six teams. There's parity, which you need in a league like this when you're just starting. And then the broadcasts have been phenomenal. And maybe I'm a little partial, because I've got friends like, Julie Friend and Alexis Pearson on these broadcasts who are tremendous at their craft. Clay Matvick, longtime broadcaster in the in this market, just awesome at what he does. And so I've really had a great time, even though I'm working the Wild season, and a lot of times I'm watching on my laptop from the road or taping games at home, giving my daughter tickets so she can enjoy those games. The success this league has been tremendous. And, you know, having known Natalie for such a long time, and our connection probably goes back to the early 2000s, you know, she's always been a super quiet gal, right? Real reserved. And later in life, as she's got into coaching and now on the managing side, she's come out of her shell a little bit. But it'll be fun to hear the backstory on how that evolved, because when she was in high school, she was super shy. And there was a lot of media attention at the time on her and girls hockey, because it was new and she was this amazing player and she didn't love the spotlight. Knowing her, it wasn't her favorite part of being a great hockey player. And so it'll be fun to kind of connect with her today on the show on the backstory, playing for your dad as she did at Eagan High School, and then going on that big stage where people were filling up rinks. If Eagan was playing a game on the road, let's say at Burnsville or over in Bloomington, it would be sold out because people wanted to see Natalie Darwitz. Her and Chrissy Wendell at that time were just these superstars that everybody was clamoring to see. And when they eventually played during their time in high school, Chrissy played for Park Center. And when they played Eagan and Natalie, you had to get tickets in advance of that game. And I mean, well in advance, the day before. and the fire marshal on hand to make sure that people can get it. I was there. I remember it well. This is an all-time iconic player in terms of girls hockey in the state of Minnesota, who's gone on to do great things after her playing days. As I mentioned, high school and college coach, Olympian, and now general manager in the PWHL. So there's going to be a lot of, I think, deep cuts on this one. Some great stories going back in time, stories we probably didn't even know existed. And I really want to find out how she came to the game and how hockey became such a big part of her life at a young age. Because as I mentioned, some of these crowds and some of the platforms that Natalie created on the girls' side, she was a young person at this time. I mean, a teenager trying to deal with that kind of pressure. I wonder how much of that she knew on the outside looking in, because I think sometimes when you're a player, you try super hard just to focus on the task at hand. And it was probably a situation where she knew some of it, but probably didn't know all of it. So I'll be super excited to kind of hear the backstory there and just connect with one of the all-time greats. So it's going to be Natalie Darwitz here on Wooden Sticks. And we want to put your business, you know, your company, your friends, your family, give them a platform here on the Talk North Network. We're strong. We've got a huge following. And if you love hockey the way I do, these are loyal people. So let's get you involved. Let's get you connected with Karen Cleary. Email her at kcleary, C-L-E-A-R-Y, at talknorth.com. And we're looking for sponsorships on our show, not only for our benefit, but for your benefit, to put your business, to get your name out there. And as I mentioned earlier, the hockey following is a very loyal bunch. We'd love to help promote your company, your place of business here on Wooden Sticks. And when we come back after this quick break, we bring you the all-time great on the girls' side here in Minnesota, Natalie Darwitz. Kevin Gorg with you back on Wooden Sticks. As promised, a local hockey legend joins us today. I'm so excited to talk with her. I've known her for many, many years. Been a huge fan of hers. It's Natalie Darwitz, who started her hockey journey way back in Eagan, back in the late 80s, early 90s when she started playing hockey. Natalie, thanks for being on Wooden Sticks.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. I appreciate it.
I know that right now you're the general manager, and it's the PWHL, and it's just been a unbelievable start to this new league, and we're going to get into a lot of that. And just, it's amazing to me how many hats you've worn. You've been a high school coach, you've been a college coach, you're a general manager, you've been an Olympian as a player, you've been a professional hockey player, you played for the Golden Gophers. But on Wooden Sticks, we like to go back to where it all started, and we like to talk a little bit on the front end here about the equipment. So how old were you when you started playing hockey? And I'm just guessing, but maybe I'm off here, but did you actually start with a wooden stick?
Yeah. So I grew up in a household of, I was the youngest of three. I had an older sister, older brother. So being the youngest, it was, do you want to hop in a car with mom and Nikki and go to tap dance? Or do you want to go with dad and Ryan to hockey? And I was quickly in my dad's vehicle to go to the rink. And so at that time, you know, Kevin, as you know, there wasn't many ponytails on the ice. So I kind of, you know, was relentless with my parents saying I want to play. At that time, you know, we were going to open skates. I knew how to skate. I always had a stick in my hands, which was, yes, a wood stick. You know, out in the driveway with the rollerblades on and stuff like that. And I just kind of weared my parents down. So when they said I was, when I reached my fifth birthday, which thankfully I'm an October birthday, which is just right about when hockey season starts, they said I could play. And on my fifth birthday, woke up, and the rest is kind of history as far as my hockey career. But yeah, started out with the wood Christian stick for sure.
And what was the draw to hockey outside of not wanting to be in tap dance? Like, was there a team you watched as a little kid? I know your dad was a coach. What drew you to the game of hockey that made you love it so much as a youngster?
Yeah, I think we're just a hockey family. You know, my dad played growing up. He coached. My uncles played. Every Friday and Saturday night, we had the Gopher men's hockey games on. We were going to North Star games, was watching Neil Broughton. I just loved it. I was that kid at the rink who, yeah, was running around playing kick the can and shooting pucks around. But I also watched the game. I watched my brother play it. I wanted to be out there. When we went to like North Star games, and my dad always joked, like, I watched the game. I wasn't just like a 4 or 5 year old kid getting popcorn and cotton candy. I was actually watching the games. So I just loved it. It was the first thing on my mind when I woke up and the last thing on my mind when I went to bed, and just had a innate passion for it. And it was just something I always wanted to do in my free time.
So did you grow up playing with the boys as a youngster before girls hockey really blew up in the state?
100%. There were no other ponytails. You know, I heard a little bit of Chrissy Wendell up in the northern suburbs. I was down in Eagan. I heard of, obviously, Winnie Brote and the Curtin sisters. But I played boys hockey until through peewees, and then I made the transition to high school girls hockey. And at that time, I don't quote me on this, but maybe high school girls hockey was a sanctioned sport in the state high school league for maybe 5 or 6 years at that time. Yeah. You know, when I was playing, our state tournament was at the Coliseum. So kind of aged myself there, but, so I grew up playing with the boys. I loved it. I think it was a big reason, you know, why I was successful later on in my career. Because I knew no differently than just, I was just playing hockey. It didn't matter if I was with boys or girls. But at the time that was the only opportunity.
Well, I got to tell you a true story. When you started playing at Eagan, on the girls team, I was a boys varsity coach. At that time, I had gone from Burnsville to Moundsview, and I had watched you play. And I remember vividly telling my assistant coaches, like, there's this kid, Negan. And not only is she better than any guy on our roster right now at Moundsview, but she's smarter. She's better with the puck. And I said, we have to go watch her. So I remember taking my coaching staff to multiple games just to watch you play. And what I remember, Natalie, is whether you were at home at Eagan or on the road, it was like a traveling circus. Like, you were the draw. The building was full. And I guess my question here today would be, take me back to being a teenager, a young high school player, where you had to realize at some point, like, this building's full, not only because people love hockey, they're here to see me play. And that had to be, number one, really cool, but it also, number two, had to put a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't tell me the story when I was in current moment, because then I would have probably got nervous, you know. So honestly, I was aware, but not too aware, and maybe the naiveness was good. You know, I was just kind of going out and playing hockey. You know, I think one of the times when I got clued in was when Eagan hosted Park Center, which was Chrissy Wendell's team. And I remember the buzz, you know, all fall and early winter when we were going to play. And then, you know, just hearing grumblings of the rink manager at Eagan saying, you know, the fire marshals were in and they're going to have to not let people in at a certain point. And so that kind of made me, you know, realize, you know, we're doing something pretty special here. And people weren't coming out to see two great girls play. They were just coming out to see great hockey. And so that's when I kind of realized we were doing something special, and we had an opportunity to grow the sport and to do bigger and better things. And so I think the cool part is, you know, like you with the NHL guys playing in front of 18,000 plus every night. If you look around and think about it, you know, that's when you start to get in trouble. When you're on the ice and you start to hear your teammates talk, you don't know that 18,000, you're in the zone. And I think that's kind of what I was doing. But now kind of hearing the stories of your stories and other people, and it kind of go full circle. It was really neat that, you know, we were part of that generation that we really propelled the sport forward, especially on the women's side.
And I can attest to that, because shortly after being a boys varsity coach for 5 years, I transitioned to the women's game and took the St. Thomas job in 1998, and not really knowing what I was getting into and not knowing how much I would love it. And I absolutely did. I loved it so much more than coaching boys high school hockey, for whatever reason. The game in the early 2000s, kind of in the middle of my time at St. Thomas, was blowing up. And I look back, and you mentioned some of the names, the Curtin sisters, the Brotes, yourself, Chrissy Wendell. There was a core of players that had this unbelievable talent. How much did you guys in the off season skate together, train together? Because I know nowadays all the best players have this elite league, and there's a different vibe now where players are all like friends at an early age. For you guys, as kind of the pioneers of women's hockey, how much did you have contact with those other superstars, and how much did maybe that lead you guys, whether you were close or not, to all playing for the maroon and gold at the U of M?
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, it wasn't like it is now, where the kids are at the rink 7+ days a week. When I say plus days a week, it's because they're too much.
I know, so
we played other sports. I remember Chrissy played baseball, right? She was in the Little League World Series. I played fast pitch softball. The only time we saw each other was on Sunday nights when we skated for Jack Latherwick at Augsburg Arena. And, we just would have a quick session and Jack would run us through some training on and off the ice. And that was probably, about it in our middle school or high school days. Obviously, when we got in college, it got a little bit more serious, but to a couple of times a week in the off season. But, I think the cool part is we were busy doing other things and doing other sports. Like Winnie Brote's one of the best golfers. She was golfing all spring and summer. And, I think it made us actually better that when we went to the rink, we were that more efficient. We were that more focused. We took it that more serious versus, quantity over quality. So the fun part was always getting together every Sunday night and hanging out and seeing what each other's adventures were up to and what they were doing and what they were doing on the lake and going to their cabins or whatnot. So I think that's what made it even more fun to come together once a week. We weren't seeing each other 5-6 days a week. When we saw each other, it was special, and we got a lot out of our training.
Yeah, I love the way it was, where you had multiple sports and other things to do. It's become very specialized, and I get it. Like, I watch high school hockey now and try to compare it to what, maybe we were doing back in the mid-80s, and it's just a bigger, stronger, faster athlete now. I get all of that. But there still, to me, is something you miss if you don't have the chance to have a different set of friends, a different sport to play. And, for you, you had your dad coaching you at Egan. You mentioned Coach Blatherwick, who's one of the legendary coaches, Herb Brooks guy, when it comes to training those Olympic players that won the Miracle on Ice game and the gold medal in 1980. So how much did your dad and Coach Blatherwick and some of those coaches you had at an early age influence the player you became as a collegiate player, as an Olympian, and as a pro?
Oh, immensely. I believe you're a product of your surroundings and surround yourself with good people. And, my dad, Jack and my dad were very different. Obviously, you got your dad setting and, you go to the rink and he's your coach, but then you hop in the vehicle and are you dad now or are you my coach still? But I loved it. I loved playing for my dad. A lot of people think, he was hard on me or whatever. He wasn't. I was more hard on myself. And there were times where, all he had to do was give me a look and I'm like, got it. I need to work harder. But I loved it. I think it created a special bond and something I look back on my childhood and go, that was really special to have that bond with my dad and spend so much time with him. And then, someone like Jack Blatherwick, just taught me so many life lessons and just was a tremendous human being and did things the right way and how he trained us. He got the most out of us. You talk about squeezing, every ounce of potential out of you. That's something Jack knew how to do. He knew how to motivate you. One of the best storytellers, obviously, with his art, his ongoing let's play hockey, section. Just every time I would read those, I'm like, that's just Jack. And he just had the stories and resonated with you to make you the best. I remember like his piece of advice to me as I kind of was going through college and then on to the next Olympics when I was training with him is he was like, Natalie, if you don't think before you go on the ice, every time you hop over the boards that you need to be the best player on the ice. He's like, that has to be your mentality. Or when you're at a face-off, I want the player next to you, across from you going, oh crap, Natalie's on the ice. That's how you have to train and play. And that's all he needed to say to me. And it was just, locked on. And that's kind of was my mentality when I trained with him. And he just made the game so fun. I think sometimes we forget, this is a kid's game. It's supposed to be a lot of fun. Were his training sessions hard? Did we have walk out of there drenched with sweat? Absolutely. But he made it fun. I remember a story. He said to us, he used to take us over to Baseline Tennis Center next to Ritter Arena. And he had a Gopher men's tennis player. And we probably went back and forth trying to catch his balls, his tennis balls he hit us. And he's like, I could easily bring you to a park and have you do 100 sprints. And you would probably give me the finger and walk away. Or you could come here and not notice you guys were chasing down, you know, these tennis balls and trying to hit them back over to them. And you probably did more than 150 sprints and loved it. Wow. And I was like, that's why we trained with him. He made it fun. He understood us. He's just a great person and deserves so many accolades that he already has and probably deserves so many more than he hasn't gotten yet. So
I love that story. I love outside the box, the tennis angle to get you to move. Hockey's all about legs. The stronger the legs are, mm-hmm. the better you're going to be. That's a fascinating way of training. So we always think that every kid from Minnesota, if they have the opportunity to take the scholarship, they're going to play for the Golden Gophers. And I think for the most part, boys and girls side, that plays out that way. I don't know the story, so I'm going to ask the question. I know you had a lot of options. How hard of a decision was that after your time at Eagan to head to Minnesota? Were there other suitors? Did you have other really good visits, friends at other schools, or was it always going to be the Gophers?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it was always going to be the Gophers. I just think growing up, like I shared with every Friday and Saturday night, it was watching the Gopher men's team on TV. The fact that, you know, years prior that they got a team on the women's side, it just was a no-brainer. At that time, too, I was on the road with the U.S. Olympic team away from home at a young age. I just wanted to be back home. So I think all the boxes were checked that, you know, it was ingrained in me, the maroon and gold. At that time when we were kind of going through the process, it was only a handful of teams in the race. You know, it was Gophers, Duluth, Harvard was really good. We played both of our national championship games against Harvard. Mark Johnson wasn't at Wisconsin yet. He was, once we were there, he started to take over at Wisconsin and you saw the immediate impact he had. So, quite honestly, it was only like a 4 or 5 team race, not like it is now where, goodness, you can go to a lot, and you know, like your alma mater that you coach, St. Thomas, is now in the equation. There's just a lot of opportunities now, and you're seeing a lot of, you know, different teams raised at the top of the standings. But at the end of the day, yeah, I think I would be lying and fooling, you know, everyone if I said, oh yeah, well, I was looking here. No, at the end of the day, it was Gopher. It was being wearing the M on the chest and being a Golden Gopher.
What were those national championship games like for you as an individual, being one of the star players, playing at one of the premier programs, knowing it's, you know, it's not like the Stanley Cup where you get 7 games to figure out who the best is. It's a one game winner take all scenario.
Yeah, no, I honestly, a lot of people ask, they're like, what's one of your favorite hockey memories? And quite honestly, I say when we won back-to-back national championships, there's nothing like throwing your gloves in the air, hogpiling on the goalie. You know, the first year we won it, the previous year we just were below expectations. We went to the Frozen Four, we lost out in both games, took fourth. We had an awesome roster on paper. And then the next year we figured it out and beat Harvard. And then the following year, we were number one all year long, had a target on our back. You know, you're talking, just looking back at the roster we had, it was kind of back in the day, like the Doug Woop days where it was 95% Minnesota kids. You know, Jordy Horak was our goalie, Ali Sanchez, Adi. Just you look back and it's like, you know, like you talk about, you're with each other, training with each other on Sunday nights with Jack, and then in high school, and then all of a sudden now you're on the same college team. And those are some of my fondest memories of playing hockey. So anytime you get to throw your gloves in the air or call yourself number one, especially at a high level of the NCAA, it's pretty special.
And you mentioned it earlier. It was a combo platter for you when you were a college student. You were not just a Golden Gopher, you were representing your country. You were playing for Team USA. And I don't know how that balance works out. I don't know how you avoid getting burnt out because there's so much hockey, so much training, and you're getting kind of pulled tug of war style back and forth between your college team and your country. Obviously, it's an honor, and you had a hell of a run. What was that experience like? And if you looking back, especially at the Olympics, I know you had three different chances to play Olympic hockey, which is just amazing. How did that balance work for you?
Yeah, I was, you know, very fortunate to have a decade career at USA Hockey. And it started when I was 15 and got on the scene. And like you said, my path was a little unconventional. It wasn't high school to college to the U.S. team. It was high school to the U.S. team, then to college, and then obviously sticking with the U.S. team. There were times there that, it was a lot on your plate, especially living out of a suitcase. I remember, you know, Olympic year, you're gone for most of the year. And that's probably a reason why early on that led me back to the U and I wanted to stay home. I had a great time with USA Hockey and met fantastic teammates and people that I've come into, went in on a path with. And, it made the season longer, right? So we would go from a high school or college season and it would end in March. And then all of a sudden we were off to world championships in April for 3 or 4 weeks. And then getting back in May and then all of a sudden starting off season training in June. So yeah, it became a balance. And, going back to Jack, he didn't have us put on our skates until July, which when I tell families that now, they're like, what? You weren't on your skates for 2 months, 3 months? I was like, yeah. And so you figure out your own balance. And that's, again, just being surrounded by the right people who understand you and understand how you tick. He knew we needed that time off to come back hungrier. So there's a good part to putting your hockey bag away and going to play another sport or, having a different friend group or better yet, just playing roller hockey and playing unstructured stuff with your buddies. I think we all would look back and put that as a big piece of the puzzle why we were successful. But no, USA Hockey was great. Three Olympics. My first one was 18. I was really fortunate. My Olympics, two out of the three were in North America. I had Salt Lake, and I was 18 years old. Had a lot of family and friends and high school friends come down. It was pretty awesome. I was still enrolled at Egan High School as a senior at that time when I was playing in the Olympics. So. For me to be on TV during the school day and my buddies watching was pretty wild. And then 06 was a little bit of we underachieved there. We lost a shootout in the semifinals, which put us in the bronze medal game. So it was a kind of a complete disaster there. A lot of people were like, well, you still got bronze. I get that, but
wasn't what you wanted.
Definitely underachieved. And then my last one was Vancouver, which obviously when Canada hosts an Olympics and they love their hockey, it was pretty special. And Mark Johnson was the coach of that 2010 team. So that was pretty fun to have him, a legendary coach in person. Then after that, I kind of hung it up, and that's kind of when the coaching, started happening and all this stuff kind of came into play and it has put me into a spot where I am now. So,
and we're going to get to the coaching and a little bit into the new gig with the Minnesota PW. But I got to go back to 2010 in Vancouver. That was a very memorable Olympics on specifically the hockey side. You guys had your battles. Of course, Canada, as you mentioned, just adores hockey and lives for the game and does it the right way. And then what I remember so vividly about those Olympics in 2010 is the golden goal. Heartbreaking for all of us here in the States because it was scored by Sidney Crosby after Zach Parise had scored a really key goal for the red, white, and blue. It ends up going to overtime, and Crosby scores that amazing goal. Were you in the house for that goal, or had your Olympics experience led you away from the rink at that time?
No, we were in the house to agonizing the heartbreak as well. Oh. So I think it was, we unfortunately, you know, lost 2-0 in our gold medal game to Canada. So, we were feeling good because we were up at a certain point. The U.S. was up, and we're like, okay, well, yes, at least the men can win, right? Because we were all sulking and feeling sorry for ourselves, and we were up there in the crowd, and all right, okay, at least the men can win. And then all of a sudden, it was just a drastic turn of events, and we're like, are you kidding me? Get us out of here. Get us out of Canada right now. it was tough, but it was obviously, you know, quite the experience to witness that and be a part of that. That's one of the cool things about the Olympics too, is just going to the different events and venues. And, you know, we're pretty lucky that we got to sell that game and, you know, be a part of it.
And you mentioned 3 Olympics, being a part of the festivities. If you could go back in time and take us to one event that you watched outside of hockey. So you're not your game, not the men, a different sport, whether it was 2002, 2006 or 2010, which event did you get to watch at any of those 3 Olympics that kind of blew you away with what those athletes could do?
You know, I think, you know, seeing on TV doesn't do this sport justice in person, but short track speed skating.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just that was the Apollo on Anton Ono era of short track speed skating, where it was actually very vicious. Like, they're cutting each other off, and, you know, and then just seeing that live, how fast they're going, how long those sticking blades are on their skates. You know, I think one event we saw a gentleman crash, and just, you know, at the speed they're going on TV, it just doesn't do it justice. So we were in the house. I don't know what Olympics it was, but it was one of the short track speed skate finals on the men's side, and I think Apollo won, and it was a really cool event and cool experience to be a part of.
Just amazing. Yeah. The whole Olympic thing, I just love it so much. I always watch, winter's my favorite. I'll watch both, but, you know, I'm drawn to the winter. Like a lot of hockey players, I love all that stuff, whether it's skiing, the skating. It's just, it's incredible. The athletes are just so, so incredible. Let's get into the coaching stuff, because you've been an assistant coach with the Gophers. You've been a head coach at Hamline University. You've been a head coach at Lakeville South on the high school side. I get it. Your dad was a coach and a really good coach, so that probably is what drew you to the idea of being behind the bench. What did you love about it? What did you maybe not enjoy so much on the side of coaching? Because I've done it, and I know there's good and bad, and it's still awesome, but there is good and bad.
Yeah, I originally had no interest. You know, and it was during the time where, you know, we didn't have the PWHL. We didn't really have professional hockey. The Whitecaps were around, but it was maybe like a once, twice a month thing. And so I was done with college, and I was training for the next Olympics in 2010. And my dad's like, you're not doing anything. Why don't you come out and coach with me at Egan High School? And I was like, no way, not doing it. He just twisted my arm, and you can't really say no to your dad sometimes. And so he just said, hey, come out once or twice a week. That's all I'm asking you to do. You got free time. Just come on out. And I said, fine. You know, and once and twice a week, all of a sudden turned into, I was there, you know, 4 times a week. I was there every day, and now I was on the bench coaching, and I absolutely fell in love with it. And quite honest, I'm actually very introverted by nature, and was a quiet person, and it honestly just got me out of my shell. So when I was still playing, all of a sudden I kind of developed into a leader with USA Hockey and was eventually named the team captain, and I firmly believe it was because of coaching, because I have to now communicate. I couldn't just go on the ice and do it myself, you know, or just say, you know, I'm going to take the puck and go. I had to learn good communication skills. If a player didn't understand, how could I now channel Jack Blatherwick and explain it into a way, or motivate them in a way that they were inspired and they want to intrinsically do it. So it just honestly made me get out of my shell and made, you know, personal growth and communication and leadership skills. It just kind of took off. And so, you know, I do have to thank my dad for kind of knowing best and getting me involved, because I absolutely loved it at the end of the day, and it made me a better hockey player. It made me a better teammate. So much so that obviously when I was done in 2010, I knew that was a passion I wanted to follow. I didn't know exactly what it would look like. But I knew I wanted to somehow be involved with coaching and staying in hockey. Started running my own hockey camps in the summer and stuff like that. And it kind of just morphed into real quickly after the Olympics. You know, I went back to the University of Minnesota. I was an assistant coach for a couple years. And then I took the job at Lakeville South at the same time when I was getting my teaching license, because that's what the route I thought I would go. And so I was at Lakeville South as a head coach. It was a lot of fun. I was going to become a teacher. And then that's when Hamlin kind of came calling.
Yes.
And I'm always like to the AD who used to be at Hamlin. He's at Eau Claire now. I'm like, I went back and got my teaching license and spent all this money. I didn't use it. which was a good thing because I loved Hamlin. And so I kind of grew the D3 ranks. And, you know, as you know, D3 is awesome. You know, you weren't there at St. Thomas anymore, but when I got to Hamlin, but it's just such a fun, it's like high school hockey 2.0, right? And just the rivalries, like, you know, us and St. Thomas developed a rivalry pretty quick in Gustavus. And it just was so much fun to just hop on a bus and go 15, 20 minutes down the road and play St. Thomas and then them come to your barn the next night. And so, yeah, Hamlin was a lot of fun. And we had obviously a transformational experience when we started off in Oscar Johnson, which our locker room was a construction trailer. And then to move into then Trier Rink, obviously, with the Minnesota Wild and their facility. And then to go to two Frozen Fours in that time was just probably a highlight of my coaching career for sure.
Well, and I think it's interesting because the growth of women's hockey, and you've had your fingerprints all over going back to when you started at Eagan. But I look at your time at Hamlin and the type of exposure it brought to not only Division III hockey, but to the Western side of the country. When I was at St. Thomas from 98 through 2007, the eastern part of the country dominated Division III women's hockey, and they always hosted and they always won the national championship. And even though St. Thomas and Gustavus, when I was the coach, we were the two best teams in the West and we had really good hockey teams, we could never quite break through. But I think it's interesting that after your time at Hamlin, and you mentioned the Frozen Four appearances and how the game started to kind of shift to the Western side of things. We saw Gustavus last year knock down the door and finally become the first team from the Western side to do it with Mike Carroll. And then this year, our good friend Joey Cranston over at River Falls not only wins the national championship, they host a Frozen Four and they end up undefeated 31-0. And I think you've slowly seen the shift, Natalie, in women's Division III hockey. And I can't help but think that your time at Hamlin certainly had something to do with that. And it's pretty cool to see how it's changed. And again, I think all boats rise, right? Women's hockey right now is, in my opinion, is as good as it's ever been. And it's fun to see the Division III game be a part of that.
Absolutely. I think you're giving me way too much credit, but no,
I remember the exposure you brought though. I do.
Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, I'll always go back to, there's just two photos that all of a sudden always kind of make me grin ear to ear. The first one is we hosted River Falls at Trier Rink, and that place was just standing room only.
Yes.
And like you said, to see that for a D3 women's game was just tremendous. And that's kind of the stuff you saw. I remember actually when you guys were at St. Thomas and I was on the U.S. team, we trained out in Lake Placid. And you guys, we were at Plattsburgh for whatever reason, and you guys were playing Plattsburgh. You remember that?
I do.
And it was always Plattsburgh, and it was always the East Coast, Elmira's, the Plattsburghs. And you're totally right. It's the West has caught fire, and I'm so glad to see Gustavus and River Falls win the national championships the last 2 years. And it's just and the frustrating part though is those guys still have to play each other to get to the Frozen Four.
I know.
Like that shouldn't happen, right? But it's getting better. But hopefully, there's one day where it doesn't have to happen, where the West schools are there's only one representative because they have to go through each other. But you know, I just remember that, and then my other fondest memory is when, you know, St. Thomas hosted, they're their number one seed. That was the first time a West school hosted. For us, it was awesome because it was like having someone else host Thanksgiving dinner and you got to go. It was basically, we had to travel 10 minutes down the road. So St. Thomas had to host and do all the work, and it was like, yes, but it's kind of a home game for us.
For sure it was.
It just stunk because we faced each other in that semifinals, but the crowd at that semifinals, again, standing room only, it was the talk of like the town. The heck are people going to get a ticket? Because they were so, again, worried about the capacity being over and the fire marshal and stuff like that. I just remember it was just the talk of the town for a couple of days, that St. Thomas Hamlin game, and it was just so much fun. So.
And the game just continues to grow. And I guess, you know, at the tail end of our conversation, we still have to get to our hat trick hot seat, where I'm going to give you three off-topic questions. It'll be a lot of fun. But I really do have to talk about the PWHL. And in your wildest dreams, Natalie, I've known you for a long time. And you're right. You've always been on the quiet side. But you've always had, I think, this just this way of connecting with people that love the game because of who you are. And just the way you played the game was so honest. Every shift, every night, you came to play. And I think that's carried over into your professional career. Did you ever think you'd be a general manager of a professional hockey team?
No, I didn't. You know, there was no dream, because we didn't know when women's hockey would be professional. And so, quite honestly, this thing came together really fast. Yes, there were two professional organized teams or leagues before this, but so I don't want to discredit that. There has been leagues, but I think you guys can feel the difference between you know, the leagues prior and this league now. Obviously being an Excel and the credibility and you know, I knew that the product on the ice, we always talk about this, I knew the product on the ice was going to be great. Six teams, the best players in the world, the parity, the hockey's going to be great. The excitement, the backing, the spectators who have come to our games, absolutely just am humbled. You know, our 13,000 plus our first game. The state of hockey knows how to be the state of hockey, and I'm so proud to be a Minnesotan and to be representing women's hockey. But I just love our state. I love what they've done for us. You know, I thank you for that too. You're getting us on air. You're getting behind us. People like you matter, and to grow this game, the credibility, and it's just been a fantastic response to what I believe has always been here for a long, long time. And I think, you know, we were talking back to our high school days, how we sold out rinks, and like you said, it was kind of like a traveling circus to come watch me play. It's now coming to fruition 20 something years later in a professional venue. So it's really cool. And these players deserve it. It's great hockey, and I'm just gracious for the state of hockey and what everyone's done for us to support us. It's been really neat.
I got to tell you a personal story. It's going to lead to a question, I promise. But I have three daughters, and all three of my daughters aren't completely into sports, even though their dad's obsessed with them. It's okay. It's just who they are, and they're awesome. But my middle daughter, Maddie, loves to go to the XL Center, whether it's concerts, and she's been to Wild games. I'll get her tickets. She loves Kirill. She loves Flower. And it just so happened that I was able to get her some suite tickets in the Bally Sports North Suite to the home opener for your guys, Minnesota P-Dub game. And I will never forget the phone call I got from her after the game about how it was the best hockey game she's ever been to, how good the play was. And again, this is from someone outside of our little bubble of hockey. And so I loved hearing her gushing and going on and on this phone call about the enjoyment she had and how good the hockey is and how cool these gals are. So I got to ask you the question, because it was a big deal. Like, the Wild players in the locker room were like talking about this event. Marcus Foligno was a part of this, the home opener for your team in St. Paul. Take us back to that day, you know, leading up to it, hoping that people are going to show up, right? We heard all the buzz in town. There's going to be a big crowd, but then seeing it actually unfold and becoming this record crowd and the event that it was, it had to be an amazing experience. Tell us some, you know, just a little bit of the details of your day that day.
Yeah, you know, just looking back, all the stars kind of aligned. It was really cool. We didn't have a home. The league opened up on January 1st in Toronto. We didn't have a home game until the 6th. And so there was at least some time for buildup. And then Ottawa has a good crowd of, like, I think 8,000. And, you know, there's just a good media push. A lot of our, you know, a lot of media is going on around our team, and we go out to Boston, we win a game. It's on Bally Sports North, which is huge. So there's people being able to watch it and see it. And so it just creates buzz, and we're just kind of, from an organizational standpoint, looking back and going, okay, we're at 6,000 seats. Okay. Now, later on that day, we're at 7,000. Okay. Tomorrow morning, we're at 8,500. And I remember just, talking to our staff, and Glenn Andreessen's our director of business ops, who used to be with, Minnesota Hockey, and he's done a fantastic job.
Love
Glenn's
him.
Great. And I'm just like, Glenn, like, let's make a big push here, like on our own. And so him and I, and with the help of a couple other people on our staff, Joe Anderson, who I think, you know,
yes, Mr. Fun. I love Mr. Fun too.
Yeah, Mr. Fun. He's our media guy. And we're just like, hey, let's just text our contacts and make a push for this. You know? So I texted, Don at Fox 9, and then, Michael Russo, and I'm like, hey, can you just push this on your guys' social media? And all of a sudden, they all did it, and everyone's contacts did it. And now we're like 9,000, 10,000. We're like, no way. And so there was just a huge buildup. All of a sudden, we're back home. We get to practice in Xcel Energy Center the day before the game. You can just feel the buzz. There was just a different feel in the air. And then obviously getting to game day and 13, you know, I don't know what the exact number was, 13.5 and change. You know, I walked out for warmups and on the bench, and they started to open up the very top level. And I was like, no way. Because the original thought behind our games is they're just going to have partial bowl. So they're going to try to fill behind the benches first.
Yep. And makes sense for TV.
Yep. TV. And there's just, you know, get people together, more of a crowd, da da da. And so once they started opening up the top levels, we're talking like the nosebleeds. I was like, this is awesome. And then just to walk out to 13,000, and then the anticipation and just pure goosebumps. I got goosebumps now. I told the players after the game, that's probably going to be, for a lot of you, a top five moment in your life.
Yep. So cool.
Which we have a lot of great people in the room with a lot of top moments, you know, with Kendall Coyne and gold medals and stuff. But for a lot of those players, this is going to be a top five moment in your life. Like, how cool. It was a tremendous moment and a moment. It's a top five moment in my life for sure.
I'll end the hockey conversation with this. And as promised, we'll get to the hat trick hot seat, three questions off topic, but I look at the WNBA, Natalie, and the success that league has had, and how they've continued to grow the game of basketball. And this year with Caitlin Clark, it's hit a crescendo that nobody saw coming. And now the draft, and the team that's going to get her, I believe, in Indiana, has sold all these season tickets. Where do you see this going? And how much is the WNBA going to be maybe the model? Because you mentioned it now, with finally getting to one league, with the amount of teams where you can really showcase the best players in the game. But we have a lot of young players that are coming, and whether they're in high school or college right now, there is another wave of talent coming. How big can this get?
That's a great question. And that's where I think we're all driven for it to go. Like you mentioned, the WNBA, we have great organizations in other sports to give us a good map to follow. WNBA is one of them. NWSL soccer has been tremendously successful. And so we're in a situation where we can follow and understand what those leagues did really well to be successful. And we can also write our own path. There's a couple things that we've done as a league to and created our own path. And one of those is like the jailbreak goal. I'm not sure if you know about it, but if you're in the penalty box and you score a shorty, you get to have your player come out. So the power play ends for the other team.
Oh, wow.
So that's a new rule that we have. And we just have had tremendous feedback and excitement for that. In playoffs here, the top four make it. One of the caveats the league did is number one seed gets to pick their three or four seed. So it's not the traditional 1-4. So just cool things like that we're able to take our own path a little bit. Follow what's been successful for sure. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel here, but at the same time, can we carve out and pave our own path and do our own thing? And so I think you're seeing cool initiatives like that. 100% I think this year has surpassed any guesstimates of attendance and from apparel, how much apparel we are selling to the ticket sales and the attention around it in the media, the sponsorships we're getting. Now I think year 2 through 5, those are going to be the years where we have to prove this is sustainable. This isn't just a honeymoon phase. This is new and exciting. Now it's like we're going to have to do it again and again and again. And I'm very confident that the product on the ice has been really great, as your daughter said.
It is.
And now it's about, you know, these more initiatives and growing and maybe one day there's expansion, which, you know, there has to be, because as you said, we have too many great players coming in. I think you're going to see a big trend after the next Olympics of some of the older players moving out and newer players coming in, which, you know, it has to happen. You know, we don't want any veteran retiring, no, but for the game to grow, it's just a natural cycle of life. So the players like the Taylor Heisies and the Gray Sumwinkles, who are technically rookies this year, you know, they're going to become the faces of franchises. You got players like, you know, whether you like her, you love her, you hate her, Abby Murphy from the Gophers, you know, she's draft eligible next year at this time. Those types of players are coming in. You're seeing a lot of U.S. players right now come from college, and the product is going to be there. It's can we grow in the right way and do it in the right way? I think that's where it comes down to. But I think right now you hit it right on the head. There is a growth of women's sports. There's a need for women's sports. There's a want for women's sports with Caitlin Clark, what NWSL is doing with soccer, you know, has done with the World Cup. WNBA continues to be steady and successful. So there's a need for it. There's a want for it. And, you know, I spoke at the Miss Hockey Banquet last month. And just for those players on that stage to know they have an opportunity.
Amen.
To not only go to college and play some college hockey, but that their career doesn't end after that is pretty special.
That's really, to me, that's the most important thing is there is something to shoot for these young players. And, you know, having coached at the college level, that really does matter. And I guess I lied. My very last question, it's a quick one. It's just, when are we going to get a nickname? I know why the league waited, and I think you want to do it right with the branding and, you know, getting all the sweatshirts and the buttons, everything ready to go, and it's going to be awesome. When, if fans are curious, are we going to have a nickname?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I appreciate you prefacing it with that, because this is the most asked question that we get, and we have to preface it with. Hey, you know, there's IP, there's trademarks. They wanted to get us on the ice first. I would envision, you know, something coming out this summer, and that, you know, they're going to have jerseys and with logos and team name and colors ready to go next November.
Very cool.
So yeah, you see purple right now. You could continue to see purple, or you could see a brand new color scheme depending on the name and the logo. So,
well, Natalie, I'm a St. Thomas guy, so I'm definitely going to
you're okay
hope
with
that
it.
The
yeah.
purple stays all the way through. It's time for the hat trick hot seat. And I always preface with my guest by saying there's no wrong answer. And these are fun questions. And I just love to kind of learn more aside of the great hockey stories about you. So we'll start with there's no cost problem, no matter what the expense is. it doesn't matter. Your favorite restaurant meal in the Twin Cities. So if you're given a chance on a Saturday night where you can have whatever you want on the menu, cost doesn't matter, your favorite restaurant meal in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, it'd probably be a good petite filet with blue cheese crumbs on it. And Pittsburgh Blue has a good one. Yeah.
That sure does.
Yeah.
I've had it. It's phenomenal. Their happy hour, by the way, for our listeners is also pretty solid, and Pittsburgh Blue is a great pick. Next one would be, How old were you, and what was your first concert you ever attended?
Yeah, my mom took us to Garth Brooks at the Target Center.
Yes.
Maybe that's when he did like 8 or 9 in a row. Do you remember that?
I remember that because I was at 2 or 3 of them.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how old I was. I was definitely in like maybe like elementary or early middle school. But that was the first concert. Yeah, Target Center, Garth Brooks. Yep.
Oh, so good. So good. What great pick so far. Final one on the hat trick hot seat is, and again, it's hard to limit it to just one. So if tonight you want to get away from being a general manager and the stress of the season and dim the lights, pop some popcorn, and pop in one of your all-time favorite movies, for you, Natalie Darwitz, what would one of those all-time favorite movies be?
Yeah, that's super hard. I would go Youngblood. Remember that hockey
yeah.
movie?
Oh,
of Canadian,
how could I
yeah.
forget? Yes,
but
Rob
kind of
Lowe.
A, yeah.
Cynthia Gibb, Miss
Lowe.
McGill.
Yep.
Patrick Swayze at his very yeah. best. I didn't even know that movie was on your radar.
Yeah, I loved it.
You're too young.
I know, but it was just, we always watched it in college. It's just so, like Patrick Swayze taking out his teeth and throwing them.
Yes.
It's so funny.
So good.
It's a hockey movie, but yet so funny. So
it's cheesy yeah. goodness from the 80s for listeners that maybe haven't seen Youngblood, and shame on you if you haven't. I never saw that one coming. That was a great old school pick. I thought that might have been before your time. So that really caught me off guard, which is great. That's why we have the hot seat here. Natalie, thank you for doing this. Honestly, love hearing your stories. I got to watch you from afar. Didn't really know you until probably you got to be a college and an Olympian. But I'm telling you, watching you at Egan back in the day, as I mentioned earlier, it was a spectacle. And I mean it in the hockey sense of the word spectacle. You were so far ahead of the curve. And it's just been great to track your career because it's been brilliant all the way through. And so happy to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the kind words and always putting us in the spotlight. I appreciate it.
Can't wait to see where this thing is going with the P-Dub, folks. That is the general manager for Minnesota. It is Natalie Darwitz. We'll be back after a quick break. This is Wooden Sticks on the Talk North Network. We're back on Wooden Sticks here to put a bow on the show. Thank you so much for finding us. Tell your friends, tell your family, get them to tune in. We're going to have a lot of cool, whether it's players, managers, coaches, some connection to Minnesota here on the show, on the men's side, on the women's side. And today was just an awesome experience for me to have that conversation with Natalie Darwitz. Really cool to hear some of the unique behind-the-scenes stories from her time at Egan, but more specifically as an Olympian, and some of the amazing things she's done. What a journey it has been for her, starting when she was 5 years old. So we're talking 35 years now. She's been involved in the game of hockey. And as I mentioned to her, I mean, wherever she's gone, she's grown the game. And she continues to grow the game at the professional level. And to see her now as a general manager of a professional hockey team, when I first got the chance to see her, she was a teenager playing high school hockey and was a rising star at Egan. And to see this kind of come full circle to where we are now, and this league is so strong, these players and the game are at such a great level, it's going to be really exciting to see where this all goes. So I can't thank Natalie enough for taking the time today to share her story. It's the best part of this show for me is having these conversations in a format where we can kind of learn little details and nuances from behind the scenes and hearing some of her stories. And I always looked at her as being so young because I'm 57, she's 40. So I just feel so much older. I always did back when I watched her play at Egan, but it was kind of cool to find out that she started like me with a wooden stick, which really ties in neatly to this show here. So even though she is young and she's very young still at 40, it's cool that she got the start in the game before the equipment changed the way it has. And remarkable to see what she's been able to accomplish. And I do believe the way the women's college game at the D3 level has grown, I absolutely believe she had an influence on that. The light that she brought to women's hockey at the MIAC level when she was at Hamlin was something we had never seen before. And so the rivalry she mentioned with Gustavus and St. Thomas, two of the powers in that league, was a real thing. And the success she had was legit. And before she got there, Hamlin really rarely made much of a run, much of an imprint in that league. I can speak to it from experience because I coached in that league. When she got there, they not only became a power in the MIAC, they became a national power. And now the trickle-down effect is how it's elevated everybody else, like Gustavus and like River Falls, back-to-back champions on the women's side in Division III hockey from the West, which was unheard of when I got started back in 1998 at St. Thomas. And we took a long time to build our program and to get it where it needed to be. And St. Thomas had some wonderful teams and made some big runs. But to see these teams from the West now break through, it's a big deal. And so I've got to thank Natalie for taking the time today to share her story. Once again, want to get you involved on the show. Elevate your company, your name, right here. Talk North, super strong. A lot of listeners, a lot of followers. And, of course, hockey fans are as loyal as it gets. You can email her, Karen Cleary, to kcleary, C-L-E-A-R-Y, at talknorth.com. And we'd love to have you sponsor this show and be a part of Wooden Sticks so we can elevate your place of business. Looking forward to a new guest next week to be determined. So I will stay tuned here. You can follow me on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, at Gorgomatic21. And I'll update you over the weekend on who we get lined up for next week. Thank you one more time to Natalie Darwitz, one of the legends in the game here in Minnesota. And thank you, the listener, for finding this fun show. I'm Kevin Gorg. This is the end of the road for this episode. You found us here on the Talk North Network. See you next week right here on Wooden Sticks.